Blog Talk Radio.
Gracious. Boy, do we have some stories for you today. History was made yesterday in a variety of ways. We have the first Jewish American to ever win a presidential primary in America. That, of course, is Bernie Sanders. It's impressive, man. I'm going to get to the specifics of all this in a second. We also have the first reality star to ever win a presidential primary. And both these guys won in a landslide. And this has some consequences for the race moving forward. And again, I'm going to break down all that for you, including all the other clowns, Ted Cruz, Jeb Bush, how they did, what this means for their future. And I'm 100%, man. I lasted how long? A minute into the show before I had to bring it up? I was spot on with my prediction with this one, too. I said it on Twitter that, it wasn't that hard to predict Trump and Bernie winning because they were up by so much. But the latter part was that expect Kasich to do better than you think. He got second. All you guys right now are like, who? There's a guy named Kasich in the race? Yes, there is. And he just finished second. So on top of all that, I'm going to go in on Vice today. I'm sorry, not Vice, on Vox. Because they had a hilarious article titled The Great Money in Politics Myth the other day. They're so wrong that we need to create a new word that means wronger than just wrong. I mean, they're on a whole nother level of wrong to the point where I will have to try to hold back my utter scorn for this bullshit article they wrote. Sprinkling a little bit of Ted Cruz and his silliness today. We got Pat Robertson going after Bernie Sanders. We got stuff later on, including Ted Nugent lets his anti-Semitism flag fly all day long. And Tunisia might be banning even talking about weed. What? Yeah, they're going a little too far with it. And by a little, I mean a lot too far. And what kind of personality traits in you when you're young are a good indicator of success in the future? That's a, you know, it's a weird topic, but there are some answers there that you might not expect. There are certain personality traits that are really shunned that in the long run might actually be fantastic for your wallet and your career. So let's go ahead and get started here, and needless to say, we'll do that with a little bit of a discussion on the New Hampshire primary. We had an incredible primary in New Hampshire yesterday. There are some big stories now on both sides moving forward in the election. Now, on the Republican side, Trump won in a landslide. I mean, he absolutely murked the competition to the point where he more than doubled the person who came in second in votes. Isn't that amazing? Like, that's unbelievable when you think about it. And the person who came in second was John Kasich. Now, I know what a lot of you are thinking right now. Who the fuck is John Kasich? That's correct. Most people have no clue who he is. But as I said yesterday, before the primary, before we got the results of the primary, I predicted Bernie wins, and I predicted Trump wins, and I also said, look for Kasich to do better than you expect. And indeed, that was true. He came in second here. So he apparently had a very good ground game in New Hampshire. He did over 100 town halls there. He actually wasn't even polling too bad going into today. I think he was in like a tie for second coming into today. Let me go ahead and give you the rest of the results of the primary here on the Republican side, and then we'll get into the Democratic side as well. But we have Kasich in second, Cruz finished third, which is actually big news, and I'll explain why in just a second. Busch got fourth, Rubio fifth, that's not good, Christie sixth. There are some murmurs about how he dropped out today after a long talk with Trump. Who knows, maybe a VP thing going on there or whatever, but he's likely out. You got Fiorina 7th, who hasn't dropped out yet, but TikTok, I don't know what you're waiting for, Carly. And Carson in 8th. He was briefly leading in the national polls for a little bit, and now he absolutely imploded. I would be astounded if he didn't drop out soon. He pretty much has to. And somehow, Jim Gilmore, credit to him, he got a grand total of 129 votes. That's a victory for his campaign, if I don't say so myself. So the significance of this. Now, what this means is, yes, 100%, absolutely, without a doubt, not only is Trump viable, it's Trump's race to lose. I mean, from here on out, guys, this is not something you're going to hear a lot of pundits say, especially on TV, but from here on out, there's a strong possibility that this is the Donald Trump show, and he just runs roughshod over these clowns the rest of the time. Which is amazing to think about, but if tonight was any indication, oh, that absolutely can happen. I mean, he destroyed them. He absolutely destroyed the competition, and he's leading in virtually every state coming up. So we're going to go to South Carolina and Nevada soon, and he's leading there by quite a bit. So this could be just absolute destruction moving forward for everybody else. Now, Kasich finishing in second. There's an underlying story there. So with Marco Rubio imploding in the last debate and being the glitchy Marco bot and him dropping out of favor with the Republican establishment and voters running away from him like the plague, now I'm on the verge of saying he's totally done because, I mean, he really did implode, guys. He was the establishment fallback for the longest time, but he's having what are the equivalent of the water bottle moment again. And he's just reminding people how awkward he is and how big of an empty suit he is and how he's just a corporate puppet and he's a robot. So people are running away from him. Now the establishment is going nuts. I mean, what are they going to do? So the Marco bot failed. It malfunctioned. Jeb, they tried to back at the beginning, and he spent over $1,000 a vote here in New Hampshire. He was expecting to do very well in New Hampshire, and he didn't. He finished fourth. So he might be done soon as well. Like I just said, Christie dropped out. He was a potential establishment fallback guy, especially with him doing well in the last debate. But with his poor performance in New Hampshire, there's murmurs of him dropping out or maybe working with Trump for a potential VP position. So what this means is the establishment is panicking, and they're saying, what do we do? We don't know what to do. They can either go all in on Kasich and give him a tremendous amount of money and tell everybody else, hey, you got to drop out and back Kasich and cross your fingers and hope for the best, or you throw up your hands and you say, we're done. We're done. The Trumpenstein took over, and it really is a two-person race between Cruz and Trump. Now, I have to say, I'm surprised by how well Cruz did in New Hampshire. If you asked me, I would not have said that Cruz would have been in the top three in New Hampshire. I would have thought that he was going to do worse. And the reason is New Hampshire is actually one of the more non-religious states and one of the more independent-minded states in the U.S., and Cruz is coming off the Iowa victory where he was God, I'm the evangelical guy, vote for me, God, theocracy, Christianity, yada, yada. And somehow he managed to come in a strong third in Iowa, and like I said, Kasich may be a blip on the radar. Even if the establishment backs him, there's a chance he's still a blip on the radar. So it's looking like a two-person race between Trump and Cruz, and man, is that scary, because what you have there are two guys that are totally and utterly out of control. You know, Cruz is crazy and a theocrat. Trump is just crazy, and he's such a big question mark that between the two, if I had to pick between the two, obviously I hate both of them, but I think Cruz is probably a scarier person than Trump. But just the fact that we're having this conversation was inconceivable at the beginning of the race, because you had to put your money on the establishment fallback guys at the beginning, because historically they've done well in the Republican Party. they always flirt with the more extreme candidates, but then go home to the establishment guy in the end. In 2008, it was John McCain. In 2012, it was Mitt Romney. Now, they were extreme, don't get me wrong, but of the people on the stage, of the choices people had, they were the most moderate. People could pick Mike Huckabee, Rick Santorum, Newt Gingrich, all more conservative than Mitt Romney and John McCain, and the Republican base said, okay, I guess we got to, you know, vote for McCain, and I guess we got to vote for Romney. Well, now it looks like there may be a total and utter rejection of the establishment, which means it's going to be either Trump or Cruz. Now, again, there's a tiny, tiny possibility that they try to rehabilitate Marco, but that doesn't look likely, or there, you know, Kasich tries to make a run at it, but again, I find that hard to believe because he doesn't have the personality. So what are you going to do, man? It looks like one of them will be the nominee, and it's certainly Trump's race to lose. Now, on the Democratic side, things just got interesting. So you have Bernie absolutely trouncing Hillary Clinton. I mean, he got with 94% reporting. I think he had a little over 60% of the vote. Now, don't get me wrong. It was expected that he was going to win, but he kind of held strong to the wider margin than a lot of people expected, including myself. You know, I said I think Bernie's going to win, but I don't think it's going to be by as much as it's been showing in recent polls where he's just absolutely running roughshod over her. It turns out he kind of did run roughshod over her, and he gave a fantastic speech yesterday as well. And here's the thing about this. You don't know how the media is going to react. I mean, the media has been horrible to Bernie Sanders up to this point. And is it possible that they take this win and they just say, well, yeah, he was supposed to win New Hampshire. It's, you know, it's so close to his home state, so whatever, let's move along here. It's possible they do that, and if they do that, that's really going to hurt his campaign. But it's also possible that since the establishment idiots are idiots and they didn't see this coming, you know, everything's going to be burning. Everybody's going to be feeling the burn, and they're going to go, oh, my goodness, I can't believe he actually won something. That's insane. That's crazy. And then they rile everybody up, and they keep talking about it and how incredible is this, how incredible is this. And then that momentum can move forward, and it can affect South Carolina, and it can affect Nevada. But here's the thing that Bernie supporters need to understand. Guys, he's getting his ass kicked in the polls in the upcoming states. Look, I'm just the medium for information here, okay? Don't kill the messenger. Now, some people made the counterpoint that they haven't done polls in those places recently, so perhaps the landscape changed post-Iowa, where he lost by 0.2%, and what happened here. I'm sure that's true, and, you know, that's something that perhaps can affect it going forward. But don't think you're going to cruise to the nomination. Because, again, if you go state by state and you look at the polls for the upcoming caucuses and primaries, he's off his turf now. You know, he invested a lot in Iowa and New Hampshire, and people felt the fucking burn. But you still have to make people feel that burn in the states upcoming. There are a lot of Democratic voters. See, you don't understand, a lot of people are not politicos. They're not necessarily like you. They're certainly not like me, where I eat, sleep, and breathe this stuff and live this stuff. So, you know, you could be just a run-of-the-mill Democratic voter who doesn't know anything really about Bernie Sanders, and when you're asked by a pollster, hey, who do you support, it's just a duh. It's like a fallback, well, of course, Hillary, sure, I'd vote for her. And that's the place that we're at right now. And that's why I say the media narrative is important moving forward here. And I don't think they're going to do any favors, and we can't rely on them to be accurate about Bernie and his message and his policy positions. So that means it's on you. That means it's on everybody who's a Bernie supporter to get out there and spread the word and feel the fucking burn. That's what it means. And again, can he start chipping away? And is it possible that he really makes a run at this thing? Absolutely. But I would be lying to you if I said that as of right now, the fact that he trounced her in New Hampshire, that means it's a perfect indication of everything moving forward and he's somehow going to cruise to the nomination. I like how I said cruise, Ted Cruz, no pun intended. But that would be a lie, so I can't tell you that. There's a lot of work ahead of us here if you want Bernie Sanders to win. People have to hear his message. And then I think when they do hear his message, well, then I think they'll say, yeah, I want that guy. So we'll see. It's a matter of getting the word out here. But understand, it was a historic night last night, man. It really was. I mean, for a variety of reasons. You have the first ever reality show blowhard winning a primary, presidential primary, and he did so in a landslide. And also, let's not forget, you have the first Jewish American to win a presidential primary. That's Bernie Sanders. That's fucking historic, man. And, you know, one can even say the first kind of atheist, too. Although there are some presidents in the past that weren't so Jesus-y and religious, and they got elected. There are some who were closet atheists and some who were kind of like openly non-religious. But it's a big thing, man. It's a big thing. And also a guy who calls himself a democratic socialist. It's a new day in America, and we see that now. And, you know, hopefully there's some momentum here moving forward. On the Republican side, it's Trump's race to lose. On the Democratic side, even with the overwhelming Bernie victory, it's still Hillary's race to lose. She's up by about 12 points on average nationally in the polls when you look at the average on Real Clear Politics. But perhaps there can be some Bernie-mentum moving forward, and they can really make a run at this. Okay. All right, now we go to Hillary Clinton and her concession speech. And there's a lot to say about this, man. There's a lot to say about this. Hillary Clinton gave a concession speech yesterday in New Hampshire, and she started using the strategy that she should have been using since day one.
In this campaign, you've heard a lot about Washington and about Wall Street. Now, Senator Sanders and I both want to get secret, unaccountable money out of politics. And let's remember, Citizens United, one of the worst Supreme Court decisions in our country's history, was actually a case about a right-wing attack on me and my campaign. A right-wing organization took aim at me and ended up damaging our entire democracy. So, yes, you're not going to find anybody more committed to aggressive campaign finance reform than me.
Okay, so this is fascinating because it appears like behind the scenes, Hillary kind of learned her lesson and her staffers kind of learned their lesson. And they go, all right, Hill, you're not going to beat this guy with a different message. You're just not, because a different message is not going to resonate as much as Bernie Sanders' message is resonating. So you know what it's time to do? Go out there and play the Me Too game. Now, for those who listen to the show on a regular basis, you already know. I told you this months ago. I told you this at the beginning of all the hoopla. I said Hillary Clinton will have this race locked up if she from day one starts with the Me Too. Me too, me too, whatever Bernie says. Single-payer health care, and we got to tax the rich, and we got to regulate Wall Street. If the entire time is me too. Preach, Brother Bernie, preach, 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 preach. Oh, I agree. And she goes out there and basically copies his speeches. She would win that way. You want to know why? Because she already has tremendous name recognition. She already has celebrity status. So if she steals his platform and she's already a bigger name, you do the math. What's going to happen? People are going to go, okay, my choice is a really old dude who's saying this stuff, or Hillary who's saying this stuff, and Hillary already is the big name. Perhaps she'll get more people out to vote in the general if she believes all the things that Bernie says he believes. Yeah, so let's do that. Okay, again, if she did this from day one, this thing would already be over. But she didn't do it from day one. She was flailing, and she made some of the same mistakes she made in 2008 against Obama, where Obama came up from her left, and all of a sudden, oh my goodness, he won. Look at that. How did that happen? I was the inevitable one. She did it again. Now, sometimes she would come out and kind of do the Me Too thing, but other times she would come out and say, no, I'm the pragmatist. I'm the moderate. He's the one who's too idealistic, and you're not really going to get this stuff done, so let me be the realist who tells you, no, we can't. And that didn't fucking work. So, Bernie's in trouble if she sticks to this. But I don't know how committed she is to it. I still think that she thinks that there's other ways to go about this. I mean, you get a sense from this speech that moving forward she is going to do this strategy. And again, if she does, Bernie's in trouble. But she has this ability to always kind of fuck it up. And she might go back to the, I'm the more moderate, I'm the more pragmatic, he's the socialist, he's too far left, this and that. And notice, even when she's doing what I think is the correct strategy for her, which is the Me Too game with Bernie, she still doesn't do it that well, because what she said there is, Bernie and I agree to get, quote, I think secret unaccountable money out of politics. Secret unaccountable money. The devil's in the detail. Let's be specific here. So what does that mean? That means exactly what she says. Secret unaccountable money out of politics. She didn't say let's get money out of politics. She said secret unaccountable money. You know what that means? More transparency. Let's keep the system the same in terms of people, you know, corporations and billionaires can buy the politicians, but let's have a little more light showing here. No more dirty money, no more unaccountable money. There needs to be transparency and disclosure. That's one of the most overrated ideas out there. Don't get me wrong, it's a good thing because it's better than not having it, the transparency. But all that does is let you know who's buying your politicians. It doesn't prevent people from buying your politicians. See, Bernie's idea is not to get secret unaccountable money out of politics. It's to get money out of politics. To get money, full stop. Now I continue. Out of politics. So, but she's like, yeah, no, totally, I'm with you. Let's get the secret unaccountable money out of politics. No, 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 let's get the money out of politics. Yeah, no, totally, let's get the secret unaccountable money out of politics. No, 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 why are you throwing in the secret and unaccountable? Just say money. But I can't. I take a lot of that money, so I can't say anything like that. But that's the thing. You know, she is the beneficiary of this system. A lot of people are seeing through it. And Bernie needs to get his message out, and the media needs to do their job for him to win in the upcoming states, because a lot of people don't know anything about Bernie Sanders, and that's why Hillary is the default position in those states, and she's leading in the polling right now. So we'll see, man, but definitely don't send this video to Hillary staffers, because if she goes out there and she does play the Me Too game from here on out with Bernie, I still think she can lock up this nomination. But perhaps she'll keep flailing and going back and forth between Me Too and no, 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 this is, you're crazy, I'm moderate, I'm pragmatic, you're too far left. And we'll see what happens from here on out. Okay. I don't have time to do the Vox breakdown, which sucks, so I'll make fun of Ted Cruz real quick. How does that sound? He has a new ad out, so let's mock it. Ted Cruz has a new political ad out, and it's a mess. Trump, you jackass. Hear me now, quote me later. This isn't going to work. Not going to work. You want to know how I know? They fucking tried it before. All the different guys that are on that Republican debate stage have tried the argument of, yeah, this guy used to be a Democrat. He donated to the Clintons. How about that? They said this in the debates, and Trump just overrode it. He's like, yeah, no, I donate to all politicians, because when I was on the other side of this, I wanted them to do my bidding, so I gave them money. And people went, that guy's fucking honest. I don't care that he used to donate to the Clintons. I don't care that he used to be a Democrat. So why are you trying the same repeated tactic that failed? Because he can't help himself, because he knows that that argument would work against anybody else that had Trump's record, where Trump used to agree more with Democratic positions, used to be more socially liberal. And they know that, hey, if this, for example, was, I don't know, Jeb Bush, use that against him, his poll numbers would crumble from the negative 8% they're already at to negative 412%. But you do it to Trump, and it just makes his base go, why are you attacking him? Don't attack him! And that's what people are going to see when they look at this. They're going to think of Reagan's 11th commandment. Thou shalt not attack another Republican. And they're going to go, why are you violating that, Cruz? Any attack on the Trumpenstein of this nature is going to make him stronger. Have you not figured out that his base doesn't care about facts, about his past or anything like that? Look, there is a way to bring down Trump, but the problem is none of those arguments can come from another Republican candidate because they don't care about the substance of it. So if I'm Bernie Sanders or if I'm a Democrat and I'm trying to bring down Trump, oh, you just quote his own words back to him on policy. See, here he's just talking about his past record, and he's talking eminent domain and this and that. The fucking Republican voters don't know what the fuck that is. But, you know, if you, in a general election, not in a primary, but in a general election, you keep bringing up that he retweets neo-Nazis until his head spins. You retweet neo-Nazis. I see it all the time. Why do you keep retweeting neo-Nazis? I'm gonna repeat that so much to everybody in the audience. Okay, I get it. Trump retweets neo-Nazis. I get it. You bring up the fact that he said, I torture, quote, even if it doesn't work. And you portray him as a madman who's totally out of control, and you keep repeating that. You know, you bring up the fact that he calls Mexicans rapists, and you just repeat that ad nauseum. You bring up the fact that he wants to kill civilians. He advocated for killing civilians on purpose in the Middle East. And you say, this will create more terrorists. Why is Trump the best friend of ISIS? Why does he want to help ISIS? You want to kill grandmas in the Middle East and help our enemies? Well, that's pretty un-American. You keep repeating that. This is what you do in a general election. In a primary, it's like nothing works against him, because he just overrides it by brushing it off and saying, look, I told you, I donated to these people because I wanted them to do what I wanted them to do. And people go, that's honest, and Ted Cruz is doing a hacky attack. Why are you attacking a fellow Republican, Ted? And then, of course, how can I get through this without bringing it up? This is another Republican ad that has how much substance in it? None. You walk away from that ad, you have no clue what the fuck Ted Cruz is for. You have no clue. And he doesn't know how to distinguish himself. He doesn't know how to bring up policy specifics because he doesn't have any policy specifics. It ain't about that. On the Republican side, it's about narcissism and ego, and oftentimes for the other candidates there, doing what the donors want them to do. And it's not about actual policy substance and trying to make people's lives in America better. So when you don't have those things to go to, these are the only attacks you can come up with. I don't know, come up with, you have a Donald Trump action figure or doll or something, and have kids beat shit and say eminent domain, and have them say that Trump didn't used to be a Republican. It ain't gonna work, Ted. It ain't gonna work. He's the closest one to Trump right now, and he has the best shot behind Trump right now. But with attacks like this, you're gonna fall off soon too. Okay. I gotta take a break. When we come back, Vox released a hilarious article downplaying money in politics, and Pat Robertson attacks Bernie Sanders. Oof, what a great remaining hour I have for you guys. Stay right there. Son of a bitch, we are back. All right, now let's do this substantive breakdown here. I hope this doesn't drag on more than 10 minutes, but it might. We'll see. It's Vox and their silly take on money and politics. Vox released a hilarious article titled "The Great Money in Politics Myth." Yeah, they did. And it was yet another Bernie Sanders hatchet job on top of just being totally and utterly misleading and dead wrong. So here's the argument. They say the following, quote, "Bernie Sanders has a simple explanation of why the U.S. hasn't achieved universal health care. Money. It's a tempting notion, but some states have actually enacted public financing, and liberal utopias didn't follow. The laws had some good effects, but they did not make Sanders' personal platform dramatically easier to pass." Okay, so they go on to say Arizona and Maine have clean elections, and they aren't liberal utopias. Got you all, you stupid Bernie supporters. All right, so I'm going to come back to this in a second, because this is the crux of their argument, and I'll give you one of their closing lines or their central argument in one line later on here. But first, let me give you the rest of their argument, and we'll begin to break it down piece by piece. So they continue here and say, cases of outright bribery, quote, "will donate to your campaign if you vote for this bill," are pretty rare. What's more common than buying votes is buying apathy. Okay, so they go on this point for a while. Like, no. There's no direct bribery or anything. It's they're not saying, hey, here's money, now vote for this. They're buying apathy. Okay, I read the piece multiple times, and this segment even more times. I still don't even know what they're saying. Newsflash, you don't need a formal conspiracy when like interests converge. So the way that works is it's built into the system, so you don't need people to vocalize it and say, here is $100,000. Now I need you to vote this way on this bill. It's a given. So just to give a few examples of that, Wall Street lobbied heavy in Congress, and then lo and behold, when there was legislation brought up to deregulate, oftentimes written by the lobbyists themselves, all the politicians knew exactly what to do. Shocking, isn't it? Now, there might not be a recording of people behind the scenes going, here is the money, now you vote this way. But they get it. They get it. There's political donations, legal political donations, and then it's I scratch your back, you scratch mine. You know if you want that again, hey, they kind of like this bill, which lets them do whatever the fuck they want and pass off the risk to the taxpayers, so let me go ahead and vote for it. More examples of that. Big oil buying oil subsidies. Have you ever stopped and thought, why is it that ExxonMobil, one of the most profitable corporations in the world, gets billions of dollars in subsidies every year? Guys, that's a welfare check. That's a corporate welfare check. You know what they say, right? The argument is, well, yeah, they need it for research and development. Whoa. They're already one of the most profitable corporations in the world. What other incentive do they need? I mean, that's insane. By that logic, everybody should get a subsidy as an incentive to get out of their bed to go to work. No, I think the fact that you're one of the most profitable corporations, and you can continue to be, is enough of an incentive without you getting a welfare check. So why do they get the welfare check? Because they give a tremendous amount of money to the politicians. That's how the system works. All right, another example is big multinational corporations buying the politicians to keep the minimum wage low. Guys, even a majority of Republicans are in favor of raising the minimum wage. 80% of the American people want to raise the minimum wage. So why is it if we have this broad consensus we haven't gotten it? Because the one group in the country with actual political power is against it, so we don't get it. So the corporations lobby the politicians and ex-nay on the raising of the minimum wage, okay, and then they drag their feet forever and ever and ever, and they rarely do it. Okay, and then just to give you one more example, the NRA has effectively bought gun anarchy. I mean, they've bought it so that a background check bill with 93% support couldn't get through. Why? Because it's not about what the people want. It's about what the industry wants, because the industry gives campaign contributions and buys influence. If you don't see this, you're either ignorant or you're stupid. I want to be nice to you and, you know, say this in a softer way, but I just can't because that's the truth. All right, let me give you some more. Quote, big fights tend to provoke a counter-mobilization. Oh, this is a curious argument. Now, wait, I thought you said money in politics doesn't matter. Now it matters, but, oh, it's okay because if one side spends a lot of money, there's going to be an opposite side that spends an equal amount of money. Wait, so does it matter or does it not matter? Does it matter or does it not matter? Contradicting yourself. Let me continue. When conservative groups came together to support President George W. Bush's push for Social Security privatization in 2005, the AARP and liberal groups mobilized against them. When environmental groups came together to push for cap-and-trade legislation in 2009 and 2010, the oil and gas industries mobilized against them. The normal outcome is that the sides are roughly evenly matched and fight to a draw. Wrong, wrong, wrongy, wrong, 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 wrong. So can you point to some rare cases where the correct side, in my opinion, the liberal side, ends up winning because of the money? Yes, there's an argument that on gay marriage that happened, where the pro-LGBT lobby eventually had more money than the crazy evangelical lobby, and then, lo and behold, eventually we ended up winning on that issue. On net neutrality, you had these giant corporations more or less equally lining up on both sides. So in that instance, yes, you had the bigger corporations who were on the side of true net neutrality ended up winning. But on the overwhelming majority of issues, you have one side with virtually all the institutional power and the other side with almost no institutional power. So, for example, do unions have as much money as big business? If you believe that, you just don't know math. How about environmental groups versus big oil? No, big oil always wins because they have so much more money. It isn't equal. And furthermore, why would you in any way, shape, or form do apologetics for this system? Do you not understand that it shouldn't be like that even when the right side might rarely have more money? I don't want the gay rights activists to win because they have more money in the bank. I want them to win because they're right and they convince people in a democratic way. This is the way that you win political fights. This is the way it should be in a representative democracy and a constitutional republic. The idea is constitutional rights are off the table and everything else is open to democratic opinion and debate. And then, in theory, the legislators are supposed to put into law what the people want. But he's like, no, it's okay when lobbyists fight on both sides because it's kind of equal on both sides anyway, and then whoever wins, wins, and that's how it should be. But why is that how it should be? There should be no lobbying on either side. It should just be about a debate of ideas and philosophies, and then you try to convince the public. That's the way it's supposed to work, and you don't even acknowledge that. It's beyond pathetic. All right, more here. They say, the obsession with money in politics also obscures the role the structure of the American system of government plays in blocking left-wing legislation. Due to both gerrymandering and a desire to draw natural-looking districts, Democrats tend to have bigger winning margins in House races than Republicans do. That means they get fewer seats than you'd expect based on their share of the popular vote, which in turn biases policies to the right. Same goes for the U.S. Senate, which by offering equal representation to Wyoming and California, vastly amplifies the influence of tiny rural white states, which lean Republican. Okay, now, this part is actually true. But who are you arguing against? That's the thing. We already know that. Everybody already knows that. Anybody who's taken a basic civics class or government class or knows anything about American history and the way our government functions, yeah, they can tell you. Yeah, Wyoming has a lower population than fucking California or New York, but they have two senators. Yeah, that's the way our system works. And that is a bias in favor of right-wing policies because you're giving a smaller number of conservative people the same number of power as way more people in a liberal state. So, yeah, we all get that, and nobody's arguing against you on that. But the point is, when we vote for people, we want them to try for the legislation that they campaign on and the things that the people actually believe. But what he's saying is like, oh, look the other way. Don't worry about liberal policies because the system is biased to the right wing anyway, so that's okay. No, that doesn't mean you just give up on liberal policies and trying to get them through, and that doesn't mean it's impossible to get liberal policies through. You just need to know how to play politics right. You know how to win the game of politics. I've said this before, but I'll say it again here. President Obama is the quintessential example of how not to play Washington politics, where he concedes over and over to the right, and he never knows how to get tough. So in the Obamacare debate, for example, you know what I would have done? There were some progressive senators who said, actually, we had the votes for single payer, and they didn't get it. So what I would have done is you call into your office the so-called blue dog Democrats who are conservative-leaning, and you tell them, look, man, if you don't vote for this legislation, it's very simple. Your career is over. And what I'm going to do is, because at the time Obama was wildly popular in the polls, you say, we're going to primary you, and then I'm going to go campaign for your primary opponent in your state. And you see my approval rating, well over 50%. The people like me, I don't even know who the fuck you are. Very few people do. Who do you think they're going to vote for? The primary guy or you? And then that person's going to, you twist their arm and make them vote the right way. And they will. They're going to save their ass. You know what people care about in Washington? Their ass. So this idea of, like, concede, the system's biased to the right, so therefore it's over. No, you still should fight and play politics the right way for liberal positions. You're just doing defeatism. And you are doing apologetics for not getting the right ideas implemented. All right, and now I'm going to give you the last line here, and this is the core of their argument, to go back to the first point as well. They say, quote, the real problem for the left is that many Americans are conservative, and that's never going to change. I see. Now, that's what I like to call an opinion, and it's also what I like to call ignorant. So in order to counter this, let me point you in the direction of a different Vox article with Vox's very own polling data, scientific polling data. Let's take a look at that. Oh, wow. Americans are intrigued by a political revolution. That doesn't sound very conservative to me, does it to you? And look at this. Overall, 54% of the American people are in favor of a political revolution to redistribute money from the wealthiest Americans to the middle class. Only 30% are against. We have independents, 51% in favor, only 27% against. We have people who didn't vote in 2012, 58% in favor, only 19% against. We have Tea Party supporters, 55% of even Tea Party supporters say, yes, redistribution of wealth is the way to go. The only people who are against are seniors, but the country is solidly on the side of redistribution of wealth from the rich to everybody else. That is a profoundly liberal idea. All right, let me give you more here. Much of Bernie Sanders' agenda polls well. Raise taxes on the wealthy. 73% of Americans support that liberal idea. Raise taxes on big corporations. 66% support. That's a liberal idea. Single-payer health care. 55% support. That's a liberal idea. And free college, the one that all the establishment Democrats are mocking as, oh, my God, that's so far out there. 59% of the American people are in favor. It's a liberal idea. So the bottom line is true that the American people are conservative. They're not conservative. They're not center-right. They're not center. They're not even left. They are far left. Far left in America is the mainstream. And when I say far left, let me be clear here. I'm talking about far left in the context of the establishment American political system, where they consider a guy like Bernie off the fucking spectrum to the left. Well, if that's the case, then the American people are also off the spectrum to the left. So, in other words, how do we explain a system wherein Congress consistently has like a 15% approval rating? That's unbelievable, guys. How do we explain that, and point to the opinion polls and say, there's a disconnect here somewhere? How do we explain that? Well, it's very simple. The politicians are not representing you. The politicians don't give a shit about what you want. So who are they listening to? If you follow the money, they are listening to the lobbyists. They are listening to the big corporations. They are listening to the rich. That's not an opinion. That's a fact. There was a political science study from Princeton which said that the U.S. is now effectively an oligarchy, We're no longer a representative democracy. See, this is research. This is based on evidence. And the bottom line is, the American people indeed are left-wing. They do want these liberal proposals. And the main thing that's blocking it from happening is money in politics. So Bernie is 100% right. This Vox article is pathetic and 100% wrong. Okay. That took a while. All right, now let's go to Pat Robertson. Pat Robertson weighed in on Bernie Sanders' candidacy, and it's a doozy.
All those young people and his old man, this old socialist, saying all these things. You know, these kids, they I don't know if you listened to these speeches, but, you know, they kept cheering over and over.
He got 80% of the voters under the age of 29. Bernie Sanders did.
Well, I mean,
that's the amazing thing.
Is that like the kids who want to do a panty raid in a fraternity? I mean, is it kind of...
Well, first of all, it's an indictment of our education system in America.
Boy,
when these college graduates think that socialism is an economic model that works, I mean... Show me anywhere in the world, Bernie Sanders, where socialism hasn't worked. I mean, look at Greece, for goodness sakes.
Yeah.
It's bankrupt. Look at Argentina. Look at France. Look at Detroit. I mean, look at Puerto Rico. All of the socialist states are going bankrupt.
90% top tax, and he kept inveighing against the billionaire class. How many billionaires have we got? You know, the whole thing is absurd.
Even if you took every penny from every billionaire in the United States, 100% tax rate, you couldn't run the government for 3 or 4 months. That means that if you want the big spending programs that Obama came out with yesterday, or Hillary Clinton has endorsed, or Bernie Sanders, you know where the money has to come from? It has to come from the middle class. They are going to raise taxes on the middle class if they win, but they're not.
Virtually every part of that was dead wrong. So to all the fear-mongering about, no, he's going to have to raise middle-class taxes. He's going to have to raise middle-class taxes. That's what he's going to do. No, wait a second. The plans exist. The proposals exist. They're telling you what they're in favor of, and you can see if they're raising taxes or cutting taxes. So first of all, as I've pointed out in the past, you want to know who's in favor of raising taxes on the middle class and the poor? Republicans. Don't take my word for it. You go back and look, man. My go-to example that I always point to, because this was when I learned about it and my mind was blown, is John McCain versus President Obama. What happened in that election? Well, CNN Money did an analysis of their tax plans, and come to find out, President Obama cuts taxes more for 90% of the American people. The only people he raises taxes on, or their taxes are higher under him compared to McCain, is the top 10%. So this idea of, you know, Republicans are the party of tax cuts. No, wrong. Republicans are the party of tax cuts for, at best, the top 10%, but oftentimes it's just the top 5% or the top 1%. The party of tax cuts for the middle class and the poor would be the Democrats. That's historical trends. You can't argue against it. Just because there's been political framing and propaganda that people have been pushing out forever where they say Republicans do tax cuts, Democrats do tax hikes, doesn't mean it's true. Look at the actual plans. Use your own brain. Look at it. You do the math. If you want to cut taxes for 90% of the American people or keep it lower for them, well, then that means that that party is more the party of tax cuts for the middle class and the poor. Okay, so they're just wrong when they say that. Now, let's take a look at Bernie Sanders' tax plan, and let's see how that matches up with the rest of what they say. So there it is right there, the tax rate now and the and what Bernie Sanders is proposing. Now, Bernie Sanders probably won't get this, but this is his starting position. Now, if you make $250,000 or less, here's what Bernie wants to do. Not raise your taxes a single penny. So this idea he wants to raise tax on the middle class, just not true. He released his plan. He doesn't want to raise your taxes a single penny if you make under $250,000. Now, when you get over that, he does want to raise your taxes slightly depending on which bracket. Now, to their main claim there, like Pat Robertson, I want to tax them 90%. Okay, no, Bernie's top tax rate is 52%, not 90%. There's a big difference between 52 and 90. And furthermore, it's 52% for everything that you make over $10 million a year. See, people don't understand marginal taxes because they're ignorant and they're happy to be ignorant on the right, people like Pat Robertson here. A marginal rate means Everything you make over a certain number is taxed at that higher rate. Everything under is taxed at the lower rate. So it's not like he's even going to take 52% of your $10 million if you make $10 million and he's taking, you know, about $5 million from you. Even that's not true. It's every penny, every dollar over $10 million is what's taxed at 52%. So these guys don't know what marginal tax rates are, and they're just lying about his rate. It's not 90%. Like Bill Maher says, these things are zombie lies at this point, where people just say it and repeat it, and idiots and ignorant people assume it's true, and they just keep repeating it. But it's not true. It doesn't matter how many times you repeat it. It's not fucking true. So if you want to argue against him, come correct. Come with facts. And say, hey, here's why you're wrong, and I'm not going to strawman your position to tell you why you're wrong. But they can't do that. You want to know why? Because his ideas are good. His ideas are popular. Your ideas suck. Which brings me to the final things here. So a classic Republican dodge here where they go, oh, socialism, he wants socialism, it's not going to work. Oh, my God, this is like all those places that have failed, like Cuba and this place and that place. I don't even know the exact places he said, but I can give you an example of places where it's working. Western Europe. Tell me how my ass tastes, as Shaq said. It's working wonderfully there. In fact, Denmark, a few years ago, was ranked literally the happiest place on earth. And let's be clear, Bernie doesn't even want socialism. What they have in Denmark is not socialism. This is democratic socialism or social democracy. So this is a hybrid of capitalism and socialism. They will never acknowledge that nuance in detail. They don't even know their basic definitions. They just want to use the dirty word and tar them with it. Socialism, 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 socialism. So in your mind, you picture the Soviet Union or Cuba or communist China. And oftentimes, just wait for it, a lot of them already have called him a communist, and some of them are hinting at it and will do it in the future. But they either go socialist or communist, and that's it. They don't give you the nuance. They don't say it's democratic socialism or social democracy. And they don't point to the places where they have better systems than us and where they're beating us in healthcare and education and happiness and middle-class income and all these different things. All right, so in conclusion, I don't even know what panty raid means. When he said it, I had to look it up. That's like, well, these kids want to do a panty raid. Who the fuck said anything about a panty raid? You said something about a panty raid. Nobody else said anything about a panty raid. What the fuck is a panty raid? Turns out that's when, at a college, guys go around and just steal women's underwear. I didn't know that there was a specific name for that. I thought one would just call that guys stealing underwear and being an epic creeper. But apparently it's a thing, and it's a thing that Pat Robertson has heard of, and I've never heard of. I'm 28. He's 123. How come you know about it? I don't know about it. Sounds like something perhaps you may have been interested back in the day, or something that you know of, and it's on the front of your mind. And you know what the goal is here, right? It's to just, you know, say, you stupid younger voters don't know anything, and that's why they're supporting Bernie Sanders. They're just young perverts. I don't know the connection to how you got sexuality involved in this. But I can assure you, Bernie voters know a hell of a lot more than you do. You've been, reading only specific parts of the Bible for decades now, and you're a fundamentalist Christian moron who doesn't know anything about science or real-world information or policy specifics. They're knee-deep in policy wonk material, actually learning about the world and getting evidence. So what's funny is this is really projection because it's the exact opposite of what he's saying. The Bernie voters and young voters in general have way more information. They go online to get their stuff. These guys watch CBN or watch shitty mainstream news, which rarely brushes on anything even close to truth. So spare me with that. And when Stephen Moore there says, this is an indictment on our education system. Right, yeah. You're on the Christian Broadcasting Network talking to an evangelical kook. And you're going to say, yeah, education system is the problem. The academics are the problem. Or perhaps those academics know what the fuck they're talking about. And you, yucking it up with your fundamentalist Christian buddy, are talking out of your ass. I think that's much more likely. Okay. Let's take a break. When we come back, I got a whole bunch of stuff for you in this final 30 minutes. I got Netanyahu. I got Fox debating secularism. I got anti-Semitism from Ted Nugent. I got all types of stuff. You don't want to miss a second of it. Stay right there. We'll be right back. Hello?
porn star, big booties. Let me film it, then shoot it. Pretty money, no illusion. Pinning if I'm feeling bushy. Might hit your line. Got the cuffs on, all big. Got the vibrator, I'm like a big. Boy, I'm in Colorado, smoking California weed. The bitch so bad, call her ticket, cause I really wanna meet her. And I ain't kidding, no way, but I'm my mama cheetah.
Here to give them their best ratings in years. You're welcome, guys, that I'm covering you. Judge Napolitano and Stuart Varney are going to debate the issue of prayer in school on Fox Business Network. Let's watch.
Listen to this. There's a new bill. It's being considered in Georgia. It would allow prayer in public schools. It would let students pray before, during, and after school events and at events like pep rallies and football games. Judge Napolitano is here. I would suggest that that is profoundly unconstitutional.
I think you're on solid ground there, Mr. Varney. You know, I understand why politicians offer these bills, because it makes them popular with people that would like the law to change. But the Supreme Court has ruled so consistently that we're talking about young people now. We're talking about people who are 17 years of age and younger. Some could be 18. And the Supreme Court has said, when you force them to make a choice, religion or non-religion, listening and paying attention to the prayer or not listening and paying attention to the prayer, the forcing of them to make a choice is what touches the conscience of young people, and government may not do that.
Okay, now look, what we've done in America, in my opinion, is we've gone too far
in the other direction.
I have no problem whatsoever with a group of kids who want to hold Bible study on school property after school. I have no problem with that whatsoever. It's not a war on religion. It's a club within the school.
Well, here's what the Supreme Court would say, and my sympathies are closer to yours than with the court, but the law is very, very clear. The use of public assets for an openly, notoriously religious purpose is not permitted by the First Amendment. Now, can you study the Bible as literature? Of course.
What?
Can you study the Bible as history? Of course. Can classes be taught that in public schools? And again, we're talking about public schools. We're not talking about public universities. We're talking about secondary schools. Universities are different because students are older and more mature. So says the Supreme Court, and it's probably rational. But to use a public asset to promote a sectarian religion is what the Supreme Court has said the First Amendment was written to prevent.
But
now it has,
yes,
it has cleansed the public marketplace of all rational, normal references to the existence of God.
Suppose the Georgia law, which is probably going to be struck down, but maybe it drags us back to the era of sanity, where you can mention Jesus in your classroom. You can mention Muhammad in your classroom.
You can mention that in a literary, artistic,
well, in
or
a religious
historical
way.
Sense.
Come on.
And, well, the Supreme Court has said not in government property. And quite frankly, these people in Georgia should know that.
Time's up.
Okay.
It's not dragging us back to an age of sanity to allow prayer in school and talking about so-called deities in a religious sense in school. Judge Napolitano said it right there, and he's right when he says, in school you're allowed to talk about the history of religions, the facts behind religion, of course, but you're just not allowed to bring it up in the context of, we are worshiping one religion or another religion or one god or another god. But you have Stuart Varney who's, like, appalled by that. Well, maybe this will drag us back to sanity when we can do prayer in school. Why is that sanity? No, that's not sanity. I would argue quite the opposite. That's insane. Take out the word religion, put in the word cult, and ask yourself how you feel about it. Now, cults are typically smaller and a little more extreme and fundamentalist in their beliefs, and oftentimes they end with in bad ways where everybody kind of kills each other or something of that nature. But what is a religion except a very, very large cult? Now, some people are not, you know, very big into literal interpretations of their cult, and they're just part of a group, and they're like, yeah, I'm with you guys, and then they just live their life like a normal person, and I got nothing against those people. But to say, I'm part of this group has myths that we believe are true and are factual, these would be the literalists, and we're going to live our life based around that, no, that is just a big cult. Call it what it is. Religious fundamentalists are in a big cult. That's what it is. And this guy's saying, why can't we just have, I don't understand why we can't have in our public schools prayer to our not proven, non-existent space fairy. You really don't understand that? You really don't understand why you shouldn't be doing that? No, that's unbelievable. What Stuart Varney wants is institutionalized worship of Scooby-Doo in public schools. No, I don't want that. I don't want you worshiping Scooby-Doo. I don't want you worshiping Pokemon. I don't want you worshiping Harry Potter or Narnia or the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. I don't want you worshiping the zombie Jew Carpenter. I don't want you worshiping Vishnu. I don't want you doing any of that. You can learn about it historically, sure. But the idea that you're indoctrinated with this belief is true and you shall pray to said God. No, you're the bad guy there. And let's be perfectly clear about something, guys. Secularism is the compromise. So I love it when there are theocrats who act like they're being more reasonable or above the fray, like Stuart Varney's doing here. They're like, well, what do you mean? I'm just saying that we should be able to pray to our space fairy in public schools. What do you mean? You're against me? Oh, my God, you're such a bigot. But perhaps you're the bigot. What does secularism mean? It means the government will be neutral on all issues of religion. They're not going to pick one god over another or favor one god over another or pick religion over non-religion. So that's just the government saying, okay, washing our hands of this, we got nothing to do with religion. So under a secular government, you're allowed to be Muslim, Christian, Jewish, atheist, Hindu, Buddhist, anything you fucking want to be, anything you want to be. The only rule that goes hand in hand with that is you can't take your existential religious made-up ideology and enforce it on others through the state. That's all it means. That's all it means. So think about it, man. The compromise is, let's just do no prayers in school. Because then a Muslim's going to come along and say, I want my religion to be the one religion that we teach there and we pray to our God in there, and that's the only way. That's what I want. And a fundamentalist Christian comes along and say, we're not praying to Allah. We're not praying to Muhammad. We're going to pray to Jesus. I want my religion to be in there. And then somebody from another religion can come in. I believe in the Roman gods. We will teach as if the Roman gods are true. And then everybody's vying and say, we shall be the one religion that we teach and we worship and we pray. So what's the middle ground? What's the compromise? All you guys take a fucking hike. You can worship your gods on your own time, but in the government and in public schools, we're just out of that game, right out of the religious game. And these clowns think, oh, how that's so wrong and so misguided. We need to go back to the days of common sense and reason where we worshiped space fairies in school. No, I don't think so. All right, let's go to the Israeli Prime Minister and what he's up to now. Oh boy, here we go again. Netanyahu. The Guardian is reporting that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu plans to surround Israel with a fence. So they already have a fence in some places. He wants to take it further. They say, quote, Netanyahu made the statement while he toured a new 18-mile section of fence. We will surround all of the state of Israel with fences and barriers. The answer is yes. And then they continue here, quote, he described the potentially infiltrating citizens as wild beasts, also translated as predators, which I'm not sure is much better. And he quickly garnered critics in his own cabinet. So even people in his own party are like, I don't know. Now, there's one part of this that is just absolutely positively completely abhorrent, and we'll discuss that. But then there's another part of this that actually makes sense given the right circumstances. So when it comes to calling people who come into Israel wild beasts and predators, tell me what you really think about the Palestinians and tell me what you really think about Arabs and surrounding states. I haven't quite caught on yet. Can anybody read this and say, yeah, not bigoted. No, totally not. No. I mean, come on. And we've covered stories recently about in schools, we now have the curriculum saying you can't teach that story about interfaith marriage between a Jew and a Muslim because, you know, we got to keep our blood pure. Okay, yes, that would be almost exactly like a Southern segregationist said when it came to black people and white people marrying. Well, you think it makes it better because it's somebody in the Israeli government who's like, yeah, no, we need our blood to be pure. It was wrong when those Southern segregationists said it about black people and interracial marriage, but interfaith marriage and interethnic marriage here, between Arab and Jew or Jew and Muslim, no, can't do that. Blood's got to be pure. Okay, no, you are bigoted. That is almost the textbook definition of bigotry, and it's not okay. Now, don't get me wrong. Are there other states in the region that are bigoted? Fuck yeah! Saudi Arabia declares all atheists terrorists. I think that's a little bigoted against atheists, sure, but I don't excuse any of the bigotry, whether it comes from Israel, whether it comes from Saudi, or whether it comes from any of the other states. So let's be objective and let's be clear about this. Now, the part where there actually might be a little bit of sense is the idea of a fence. Now, don't get me wrong. The fence that Netanyahu wants to build, they're not on the right borders. Because Netanyahu is well known to just say, man, take something and say, me? Oh, you're against me taking this land? Oh, my God, why are you attacking me? Anti-Semite. Dude, I'm against the fact that you just annexed Palestinian land. That's anti-Semitic. Don't argue against it. That's fucking crazy. No, I'm against the state of Israel annexing more land. That's not anti-Semitic. That's rational. Okay. So if Netanyahu were to come along and say, okay, I want to build a giant wall all around Israel, and one of the borders will be the 1967 borders, and we're going to do a two-state deal, I'll sign that right now. I'll do that deal right now. Let's do a two-state deal, 1967 border, split up Jerusalem, call it a day, and move along here. Okay? But that's not what he means. He, of course, wants to build a wall that includes Israel keeping land that they stole and that is not recognized under international law, and that I'm totally against, because you don't get to walk into somebody's house, kick them the fuck out of it, and say, now I will build a fence to keep you out of your own house. That's crazy. So the idea of a fence is an okay idea if you do it on the right borders, but he doesn't want to do it on the right borders, so it's a horrific idea, and I don't know why we would expect a good idea to come from somebody who's fine with calling Palestinians and Arabs wild beasts and predators. Let me ask you a question, Netanyahu. Were you a wild beast? Were you a predator when you, killed between 60 and 80% civilians, including women and children, in your last bombing orgy in Gaza? No, I know. You could never be a wild beast or predator, even when you kill civilians and have a total and utter disregard for civilian casualties. Words like that are only reserved for those dirty Arabs. Okay. Let me give you more. Rocker and all-around douchebag Ted Nugent went on an anti-Semitic rant on Facebook, posted an image about gun reform being a massive Jewish conspiracy. Isn't it amazing? A guy like Ted Nugent, for years and years and years, he's been bashing the things he said about black people, the things he said about every minority group imaginable, and now he's finally like, okay, have I checked that last box yet? I haven't? Okay, let me throw this out there. Let me test the waters a little bit. Massive Jewish conspiracy! Gun control! So we sent out this graphic which shows Michael Bloomberg and Dianne Feinstein and Chuck Schumer and Senator Lautenberg and, like, who's really behind gun control? I like how under Bloomberg it says Jew York. He was the Jew York mayor. Yeah, nothing anti-Semitic there. And what's also hilarious about this is, unsurprisingly, it's not very accurate. Senator Lautenberg, for example, has been dead for years. And he's putting it like, up, see, these guys are the ones pushing for gun control. No, Ted, if you bothered to do even a minimal amount of research, you would have found out very quickly, virtually all the Democrats are in favor of gun control. Or some kind of vanilla, moderate gun reform. And that includes the majority of Democrats who are Christian. The Jewish conspiracy, even though more Christians are for it than Jews. But Jewish conspiracy! It's the Jews! The Jews are behind it, I'm telling you. It's those crafty fucking Jews, man. That's what they do. Ted, give it a rest, give it a rest. Now, he came out later because he saw the backlash from this, and virtually everybody's against him, because a lot of people on the far right are massively pro-Israel. Think of people like Mike Huckabee and Rick Santorum, for example. So there's a mix. On the right, there's some people who are anti-Semitic, and there's some people who are massively in favor of the state of Israel, and Israel can do no wrong under any circumstances. So he went on to say this in defense of himself when he was called out by everybody. Quote, what sort of racist, prejudiced piece of shit could possibly not know that Jews for gun control are Nazis in disguise? Oh, come on. Ted, when you're in a hole, stop digging. Stop digging. Drop that shovel. Go outside, take a shot, have a couple cigarettes. This guy's unbelievable. Okay, so let me get this straight. Chuck Schumer is a Nazi in disguise. I'm not sure that's accurate. Michael Bloomberg, Nazi in disguise. Yeah, I got many problems with Michael Bloomberg. He's a Wall Street sellout and, you know, he wanted to ban the big gulp, so I'm no ally of his. Pretty sure he's not a Nazi! Pretty fucking sure he's not a Nazi. So, what is this? I call it what it is. Out-and-out anti-Semitism. This is, you know, a guy who he's looking. Ooh, who's pulling the strings behind the scenes? You know what this reminded me of? David Duke. David Duke, by the way, came out and defended Ted Nugent on this. And what he does, because I don't know if you guys saw, but there's a fantastic interview that I'd recommend on the Young Turks with Cenk Uygur and David Duke. And what he does is you just constantly always look for where can I find a Jew to blame it on the Jew? Where can I scapegoat? Jews are behind everything bad ever. And like in the interview with Cenk, he would keep bringing up, okay, well, you say they control finance and they control Wall Street. And Cenk would list off like 12 different names of Christians who were involved in Goldman Sachs or who were at the Fed and who took part in this Wall Street collapse. And then, you know, you'd have David Duke go into his tap dance and say, yeah, but the Jews were really pulling the strings of the Christians, and the Christians are good and Jews are bad. Did I say that out loud? I'm not an anti-Semite. You think I'm an anti-Semite? I'm not an anti-Semite. Blame the Jews. Well, now we know Ted Nugent is 100% in that camp. Okay, more. A Florida neo-Nazi avoided jail despite trying to buy a bomb to kill his black brother-in-law. This is an incredible story. Raw Story reports here, quote, Harold Kinlaw was arrested with 19 other neo-Nazi bikers and skinheads as part of an undercover FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force investigation. Charges were later dropped against 11 of the suspects. The 58-year-old Kinlaw pleaded no contest in August to trying to purchase an explosive device he planned to use to kill a black family member. So he admits this. He admits this. They continue, Kinlaw, who has at least 8 prior convictions for fraud and theft, kill his sister's husband for, quote, causing family strife. Oh, because he's black. Okay, on the record here. So he only gets probation. And get this. Even the leader of the American Front neo-Nazi group was sentenced to just 6 months in jail in connection with the investigation. And the comment from the local sheriff is my favorite here. He said, quote, the fact that the American Front, the 1st SS Cavalry Brigade, and most of their members have disbanded is a good thing for our community. These were dangerous groups. Okay, wait. All of them got off. The dude who was planning to kill a black dude just got probation. Only the leader of the group went in jail, and for 6 months. He's like going on vacation. He'll be back in a minute and a half. And he's like, oh, this was important. It's good we broke up this group. I'm so happy we can put this to rest. All right, stop. Think about this. Let's say we have a jihadist group in America, an Islamist group in America. All the exact same facts. I want to kill my sister's husband, who's an atheist or a Jew. Okay, I want to kill the infidel, the kafir. I must kill him. And then a judge in Florida finds out about this. They do an FBI investigation, and then it unfolds in the exact same way. There's about a dozen people in the group. 11 of them are let go. One of them gets probation. The head guy somehow only gets 6 months in jail when he's got endless quotes. Like, these guys talk about, yeah, we're a neo-Nazi group. That's what we are. Well, if you had a jihadist guy talking about, you know, we will do an attack, we will do a bombing, we are jihadists, this is what we believe. Does anybody believe that they, if all you get is one dude a 6 month sentence and a guy who said I'm going to kill somebody and they have evidence of it and he gets probation, would anybody say, oh, put it to rest, everything's all good. We got him, guys, we got the bad guys, everybody go home and relax. He'll be out of jail in 6 months, 11 of them are free. And one of them just gets probation, even though we know he's going to kill somebody and he bought a fucking bomb to do it. Don't worry about it. It's all good. No way. 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 So let's be crystal clear about something, guys. Is every allegation ever made on the issue of white privilege true? Of course not. Plenty of people overuse it, and there are a lot of innocent white people who did nothing wrong who feel like they're unfairly being maligned, and there's too much of a generalization when you use that term. I understand all that. But is this specifically what people are referring to when they talk about white privilege? Yes. Come on. The armed Oregon militants who took over a federal building. We're talking about how we're going to kill the FBI, and they got their guns. And the FBI is like sitting back, relaxing, giving them space for weeks, letting them go out and come back and do shopping. That would never happen if it was a black group, if it was the Crips, if it was the Bloods, or if it was a Islamist organization. You know it. I'm for intelligent problem solving and criminal justice across the board. I like objectivity and consistency. I'm weird like that. Okay. The Independent is reporting on a new study that was published in the Development Psychology Journal, and they looked into the personality traits of children that eventually led to success. So there are some really interesting results here. They say the following, quote, children who are stubborn at a young age are more likely to be successful as adults, a study spanning 40 years has found. The study followed 700 children from age 12 to 52. At the start of the experiment, researchers looked at the children's behavior, including inattentiveness, sense of inferiority, impatience, rule-breaking, and defiance of parental authority. The results showed that children who frequently broke the rules, defied their parent, and were a responsible student were the ones who went on to be high achievers and earned the most in their careers. So this is a fascinating story, man. And I think the main message to take away from this is actually a positive one. And that message is, you know, if you're a young person and you're in school and you're struggling in one way or another, you feel like there's a barrier, you can't connect with your parents or your friends or whatever, and you just feel like a little bit of a social outcast, or, you know, you're somebody who doesn't like to compromise, you break the rules, you do this, you do that, it's going to be all right. It's going to be all right. You're a human being. And what they're saying here is people who broke the rules and defied their parents went on to be the most successful. Now, they do say people who did well in school go on to be the most successful, too, but that, even that, you know, there are plenty of people who didn't do well in school who end up being pretty successful. I mean, not to get too personal here, but, you know, I kind of coasted by in school because I didn't give a shit about what I was learning, and sometimes I had good teachers, sometimes it was bad teachers, and I would just do the minimal amount possible and get by with, like, B's. So, and I honestly don't think that's my fault. It's just people weren't keeping me interested, and it wasn't sold to me. The information wasn't packaged in a way where it's entertaining. And then I realized when I'm older, oh, like, that's not me. It's the old archaic way of learning where it's like, sit there and have somebody bark at you, and if you don't find it interesting, it's your fucking fault. Or not. Or you're not doing the best job teaching it, or you're not focusing on or putting the emphasis on the most important parts. So, you know, if you defy authority, you can, of course, be successful. One of my friends told me that they think the reason, one of the main reasons secular talk got off the ground is because I have this rigid intolerance of doing things I don't want to fucking do. So if all I do is focus on the show because that's all I give a shit about, well, then that may pay dividends in the long run. It's not guaranteed, and you have to get lucky along the way, as I think I did. But the bottom line is, it's not the textbook way of going through life. It's not always the right way. There's a million and one right ways to be successful or be happy. And in the end, isn't that all that really matters anyway? If you're true to yourself and if you're happy, even if the money doesn't necessarily come, you know, I think that probably means more than anything else. And the bottom line is, you don't have to be an angel. You don't have to be perfect. Oftentimes, it's the quirkiness and the uniqueness in people that makes them successful. And I've always argued, and I'm one of very few people who've argued, that when people say, hey, you're not, you know, you're putting all your eggs in one basket, you're not diverse enough here in your in the things you like, you can't multitask. You know, I'm team obsession. I'm on team obsession. I think obsession is a fucking good thing. I mean, if you can find one thing you're really fucking good at and you hammer away at that, who knows where that can lead in the future? And that's not even to besmirch the people who do a bunch of things well, because then there's other ways that they can be successful. But bottom line is, the pure cookie-cutter way of going through life and following the rules all the time, no matter what, that doesn't mean it's right and it's the only way to do it. There's a million ways to do it, and don't let anybody tell you that you can't fucking do it, because chances are you can. Okay. Let me try to squeeze in a few more here. Democrats wrote a letter to the FTC imploring them to ban gay conversion therapy. So The Hill reports on this, quote, gay conversion therapy is prohibited in California, Oregon, New Jersey, and Washington, D.C., but is practiced in other states, The controversial practice is widely discredited by medical organizations, and the lawmakers who are pushing for this include Cory Booker, Jackie Speier, Ted Lieu, and they added that, quote, conversion therapy provokes guilt, anxiety, and societal rejection that negatively impacts development of children and youth. Okay, so first of all, allow me to say that I'm actually somewhat ignorant as to whether or not they can implore the FTC, and then the FTC goes ahead and they can ban it, and then that's it. You don't need further legislation. You don't have to go through Congress. I don't know if that's true, and if you were to ask me without me reading the story in The Hill, I probably would have said, I think they have to go through Congress to do that. So we'll leave that as an open question right now. I don't know what the proper legal path is in order to get to this conclusion, but is it something that I generally agree with? Yes. And the reason why I agree with it is that as of right now, it's given unearned professionalism. So people think, because they don't know any better, if they come from a really religious background and parents want to change them and make them, you know, straight, they think like, oh, number one, it's possible. Number two, there are institutions that do it. So it gives this aura of legitimacy when there is no legitimacy. As I said, it's widely discredited, quote, widely discredited by medical organizations. So all I want is to call a spade here. All I want is the proper warnings that go hand in hand with it that says, hey, this is not approved. There's no evidence this works. And then, look, we live in a free country. If you want to be in your basement and try to fucking de-gay yourself, be my guest. But it's not going to work. And the real answer here is to let people know there's nothing wrong with that. You're not bad. You're not evil. You're not immoral. You're not unethical. If anything, the ideology of fundamentalists that make you think you're bad is bad. They're immoral. They're unethical. So we need to change the mindset on this and the ideology on this and let people know you don't need to hate yourself because of your background and because of fundamentalism. You can accept yourself for who you are and just know there's nothing wrong with being gay. And if anything, there's something wrong with trying to change people and make them think that being gay is not okay. I agree, broadly speaking, with what they're doing. I just don't know the right legal pathway in order to implement it. Okay. I'm out of time, guys. I love you. We'll see you tomorrow. Peace.